Do unto others. I have a few things to say about that. First, I have to throw away the candy wrapper from last week. Last week, I shared my thoughts about all kinds of love and how important and healthy it is to be open and welcoming to love in our lives. Love, in its various forms, can motivate us to forgive, to be courageous, and compel us to evolve, literally, to change. Continuing on the love theme this week, and expanding on it a bit, I'd like us to think about compassionate love, and compassionate love, the do unto others, live by the golden rule kind of love. To illustrate this premise, I turn to the Christian New Testament and a passage attributed to Jesus from the Gospel of Luke. Love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who ill-treat you, do to others as you would have them do unto you. I hold this teaching from Luke in one hand, and in the other I hold the reality that humankind, throughout history, more than not, has fallen short in doing just that, treating others the way we wish to be treated. There's a tension that exists between how we want to be treated and how we think that others deserve to be treated. How can there be this discrepancy when teaching itself is so simple? I'm getting to know many of you pretty well here at First Parish, and so it is with some certainty that I can say that we all strive to treat one another well. But just let one person treat us badly, or my favorite, cut me off in traffic, and all bets are off. Am I right about this? I get like almost like vigilante-like. Especially when I see someone else get cut off. It's like they're not offending me, but I still have to act. So this morning, I wonder, where one finds the inspiration to do the right thing when others around us are not necessarily doing the right thing. How can we back away from the eye for an eye adage? Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Okay, let's turn to Matthew, Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, for a second. Then he explained, "You have heard that it is said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say to you, do not resist the evildoer. But if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go also the second mile. Give to everyone who begs from you, and do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you." This is the kind of revolutionary love that Jesus shared, taught, and died for. As a Buddhist myself, I can see the logic in his words. But it is revolutionary, love-inspired, perseverance enough. Is it enough perseverance to compel us to do this in the 21st century? I know this isn't a new question. It's been debated throughout history in religious communities such as ours and by ministers and rabbis and sages who endeavor to inspire, compel, and cajole people into embracing compassionate love for the wayward stranger. It was even the topic of discussion at a Ware lecture a few years ago, which I found quite interesting. For those of you who are not in the know about what a Ware lecture is, it's an annual event that's held at the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly. There's a chosen speaker who is awarded $10,000 and offered a free podium to speak from. And then the gathered come and listen to the actual lecture. Some of the past recipients have been the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, the Reverend Howard Thurman, the authors and poet Kurt Vonnegut, Mae Sarton, Mary Oliver, the musician Holly Near, and the scholar Dr. Elaine Pagels. And more recently, it was awarded to the religious historian Karen Armstrong. Does everybody know Karen Armstrong? She's pretty amazing. I was literally wowed by Ms. Armstrong's talk as she explained that the causes of warfare and violence are often hatred, greed, and fear. These self-serving emotions have often been given a religious justification. And yet each one of the major faiths I've discovered has at its core the ethic of compassion. Every single one of them has developed its own version of the Golden Rule, never to treat others as you would not like to be treated yourself, and has said that this is the test of spirituality. That is, this which takes us beyond the prism of ego and selfishness and greed and enables us to enter into our best selves and into the presence of what some have called God, others Nirvana, Brahman, or Tao. And yet, so often, you don't hear about it. Often when religious leaders come together, they talk about a particular sexual ethic or an abstruse doctrine as though this, rather than compassion, was the true test of a spiritual life. And yet, it seems to me quite clear that unless we now learn to implement the Golden Rule globally so that we treat all peoples, all nations, as we wish to be treated ourselves, we're not going to have a viable world. This is the task of our time, to build a global community where people of all persuasions can live together in harmony and respect. This world that Armstrong is speaking of is what the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King referred to as the beloved community. It's what I've talked about since I started here at First Parish. The Golden Rule is not just a Christian ethic, but can be found, as Ms. Armstrong explained, in most of the world's religions, and as well as Roberta shared with us this morning. For example, the Buddha explained in the 4th century BCE something similar. Just as a mother would protect her child, her only child, with her life, even so let one cultivate a boundless love towards all beings. In Islam, we can also find a similar teaching. No one of you is a believer until he desires for his brother that which he desires for himself. In Judaism, similar guidance is found in the Talmud, written in the 5th century CE. What is hateful to you, do not do to your fellow man. And in Zoroastrianism, as we heard, that nature only is good when it shall not do unto another whatever is not good for its own self. And then coming full circle, the same reasoning came from Jesus, who during a debate with the Jewish ruling priests, the Sadducees, shared a new commandment. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Simple, basic. It's a Christian commandment. Many communities subscribe to the Golden Rule, and yet somehow many miss the point when we look at each other and see difference instead of connection and sameness. When religions decide to exclude and damn those who do not think alike, we are falling short as human beings. Francis David, a Unitarian scholar who lived during the 1500s in Transylvania, once taught that we do not have to think alike to love alike. And that teaching, in my humble opinion, is our Unitarian Universalist Herculean call for the 20th century, 21st century, to love even in the face of difference. The outcome of Francis David's teaching, you may wonder. He was arrested. He was tried for the crime of, I love this, innovation. Questioning and challenging religious doctrine of the times, Francis David was found guilty of innovation and condemned to prison for the remainder of his life. He died in the royal dungeon in the castle of at Deva on November 15th, 1579. Anyone see a pattern here? Jesus, Francis David, Martin Luther King, just to name three people in history who advocated for love across lines of difference and died because of it. What is so intimidating that such loving, peaceful people cause such fear? What is it? Can you imagine how different the world would be if people embraced love in the face of fear instead? Courageous is the word that comes to mind. As I mentioned last week, it is courageous to really love, because we risk everything to embrace and practice the principle of love. And I'm talking beyond romantic love here, but to be so open and so vulnerable in the face of fear, greed and anger. Now, that is some kind of powerful stuff. That's the stuff that changes the world. There is no truer wisdom and work that the cultivation of a loving, compassionate heart, spirit, and soul can be. In large measure, that is what makes us different from every other religious community on the planet. We endeavor not to judge another's beliefs as less than our own. We do not try to convert anyone to adhere to religious dogma. We encourage one another to uncover our own personal creed, spiritual, religious, or not. We are a pluralistic community that honors all beliefs and holds the search for truth and meaning as one of our seven most sacrosanct principles. As Unitarian Universalists, we are called to love beyond our individual selves, to love beyond hatred, beyond fear, beyond greed, to cultivate that peace of compassionate, loving care within us, even for those who we do not think like. This is not always easy to do, and the truth be told, I falter or have limits to this more than I care to admit, especially when politics of human rights and oppression are concerned. I don't have a lot of toleration for that. And yet I continue to remind myself each and every day that this loving our neighbor as ourself is my spiritual practice and prayer. How can such a practice inform us on a daily basis to strive to be better human beings? How can we envision and contribute to building the beloved community right here and right now? You know, I think about this. How do we do this work together? You know, as we start to imagine First Parish's future, beginning on Saturday, March 8th, and I'm going to say this to you out loud, may the plagues be upon your house if you do not attend. Was that a bit too strong of an invitation? Okay, I'd really like it if you would plan on attending this amazing opportunity to share your dreams with one another. We did it with the board, and it was actually fun, so I hope you come. And at this meeting, I'll advocate that we be mindful of what it would require to become contributing and sustaining members of the beloved community. And I'm not talking about money here. I'm talking about your heart, investing your heart. A community that creates and accepts diversity in thought and belief, and yet paradoxically refuses to accept the exclusion of others based on religious or political belief, sexual orientation, race, gender identity, and/or social economic class. We believe that the beloved community includes us all. Now that's daring. As Unitarian Universalists, I'd like us, each one of us, to engage on a daily basis in modeling and encouraging an open and embracing theology of love. If we wholeheartedly embrace this theology and the practice of cultivating a loving heart, love wins. Love wins over greed. Love wins over fear. Love wins over hatred. What better, more important work can there be for us to focus on? We have so much to think about as we embrace our future together and make the commitment on March 30th. Notice I'm giving you dates. During my installation as your 44th minister, to welcome, sustain, inspire, connect, and work for justice. This is our work together. This is what we've chosen to do. Karen Armstrong, along with a cadre of other believers and supporters of love, wrote a charter of compassion. It's quite stellar, actually, which I myself have signed on to, and anyone can. You'll see it on our website. Just look for Charter Compassion, Karen Armstrong. The charter shares a new vision for our world that begins, compassion impels us to work tirelessly to alleviate the suffering of our fellow creatures, to dethrone ourselves from the center of our world and put another there, to honor the inviolate sanctity of every single human being, treating everybody without exception with absolute justice, equity, and respect. It is also necessary in both public and private life to refrain consistently and empathetically from inflicting pain, to act or speak violently out of spite, chauvinism, or self-interest, to to impoverish, exploit, or deny basic rights to anybody, and to incite hatred by denigrating others, even our enemies, is a denial of our common humanity. We acknowledge that we have failed to live compassionately, and that some have even increased the sum of human misery in the name of religion. We therefore call upon all men and women to restore compassion to the center of morality and religion, to return to the ancient principle that any interpretation of scripture that breeds violence, hatred, or disdain is illegitimate, to ensure that youth are given accurate and respectful information about other traditions, religions, and cultures, to encourage a positive appreciation of culture and religious diversity, to cultivate an informed empathy with the suffering of all human beings, even those regarded as enemies. We urgently need to make compassion a clear, luminous, and dynamic force in our polarized world, rooted in a principled determination to transcend selfishness. Compassion can break down political, dogmatic, ideological, and religious boundaries. Born of our deep interdependence, compassion is essential to human relationships and to fulfilled humanity. It is the path to enlightenment and indispensable to the creation of a just economy and a peaceful global community. Along with Armstrong, I believe that the future that we choose should be one where all people have the opportunity not only to survive, but also to thrive. Because we, all of us, care enough to make it so. Beyond survival, let us thrive and help others to do the same. Can we imagine a world where we all, and I mean all, work together instead of at cross purposes with all other people on this planet? That what we truly want is what is best for one another. Because unless we each find peace within, there will be no peace on earth. This is not a new cause or call. It is echoed from mounts in hallowed halls, marketplaces, and seats of political power for millennia. And yet this morning, I renew a commitment with you and ask us all to stand on the side of love, to help lift the weight of oppression, wherever it may be, and face into the fear of difference, wrapping those in need who would challenge us sometimes to stay silent in love. May it be so. Blessed be. Amen.